John, how you doing today?
Hey, how you doing, Kyle? Good. And yourself?
Oh, well, it's been a long day. I had my my scheduled meeting to start getting the Board of Review people in line, and did that, got my volunteers to get that started. But the reason I'm calling you is because of the meeting last night with the Union States. You know, it's been a real royal pain in the ass trying to get trying to herd these cats, and that's exactly what it boils down to. You had two factions that were button heads the whole time, and they had me there just to try and keep the peace until this kind of worked itself out. Well, it finally worked itself out last night, and what that means for you is that we're going to be pushing forward, bringing the other states on. As we bring them on, we'll be able to now expand the numbers within the states, start populating the counties. Word will go out that the de jure governments of the states have been reformed. We'll pay particular attention to make sure that nobody goes off the deep end and starts trying to assume any titles that would make anybody think that we were forming a rival government. We're not going to do that. But we are going to claim and state our sovereign status to the world, and reassert the sovereign status of the states. So New York has already done theirs. They're part of us, but I don't know how much leadership they've got up there to be able to push this forward and get more people involved. But as more people do get involved, and as the word gets out there, then our grand juries can in fact be legally and lawfully seated. So,
well, let me ask you, how are you? What's your goal in organizing? You know, like for our goal, for instance, is four people per county throughout the United States, and there's 3,143 counties.
Yep.
So, you know, you make the multiplication. Now, the key is getting four people in each county that's going to operate as administrators for the grand jury, and then all of the people that, you know, come in that are really just, you know, kind of signing up for the pool. That's exactly what they'll be, is, you know, the pool. Mm-hmm. And then we will draw from that pool and eventually from other pools when we exhaust those. But that's kind of our plan. So our number, our magic number really is 4 times 3,143. And of course it'll probably be 10 times that before we reach that, because, you know, you don't just pull four people per county, you know. But anyway, that's kind of our goal. That's what we're shooting for. How are you guys looking at it? By the state?
No, actually, we're looking at it county by county as well. We're not set up to bring them on in that fashion, because basically, I've just created the test bed situation here, and it's going to take a little time for this to sink in. But mm-hmm. the concept of what we're doing with the boards of review is a little bit bigger than, I hate to say it, bigger. That's not the wrong term. Listen, I've done the grand juries, and I know what the weaknesses were for me.
Right.
But I didn't approach that the same way that you are, and that I like your approach on this whole thing, by the way. So whether or not you're going to be successful in getting these guys to come
right.
their high horse and into the world of common law is, well, if you ever do that consistently, then you've got something that we can all work on.
Well, of course, that is the goal. And, you know, we've come to realize we only need one access into the court in every state. I mean, you know, and we're working on Greene County, and there's a strategic reason, there's a psychology. We have experience in that county, and they've experienced us. And they kind of fear us, and they really do fear us. They don't even know, they fumble when they talk when we come into their presence. So that's a good thing for us, because they kind of know we have the truth. They kind of know there's something wrong. And they also know that a lot of the people in the offices, that when we go into these offices and talk to people, a lot of these people are kind of rooting for us. They want to see the change. They know there's a lot of crap in the court that needs to be changed.
Yeah.
But the key thing is getting into one. Once you get a seating in one court where you're actually operating out of a court, that means that that you've been accepted and acknowledged. That means you have authority and a power, the ability to talk with authority with the sheriff, and to set him straight on his real job, which is to protect the Constitution, and he's to serve the people, because he's really the people's police force. He doesn't work for the government. He works for us.
Right.
And he is to uphold that Constitution and make sure it's not abused. And he himself and his deputies better not abuse it, and we will have to train him. There'll have to be a relationship, and we'll have to literally school him. But once we get past that point, we go in and we deal with our... with that particular local judges, and let them know in no uncertain terms, hey, this is where it's at, what common law. If you take this into an equity court, you take this into some other kind of a court system, it has got to be through the agreement of both parties, and they both, once a person sets forth a court of record, that's it, it's a court of record.
Yeah.
You can't change that. And if they break that rule or that law, then they're going to face the wrath of the grand jury. Now, most of these judges, they've got so much evil. I've been in the courts now about, 3-4 years now, and I've been writing papers, arguing cases. I've been in the federal court. I've been in the Supreme Court of New York. We've been up to the appellate courts. We've been through the town courts, the city courts, family courts. You know, we've been on all of them. And what we found was just alarming, pure 100% criminals.
Oh, yeah.
That's all they do all day long. It's so disturbing. And so we know a lot of those people are going to end up, we're not going to put them in jail, but they're going to end up with having to pay a lot of restitution, and a lot of judges are going to have to go to jail. And it's not that we're going to go chase after them, because, you know, we make that point. We're not there for a witch hunt, because we're really there to make friends and get people to obey, and what concerns us is what happens from this point forward. But nevertheless, people will bring to us cases, okay, and they'll say, you know, when they discover that the grand jury is there, they're going to say, let me tell you what this judge did to me. Well, let me tell you how they destroyed my family or my children or whatever the case may be. And we'll have to now seek remedy. And that's why all these people have a real serious problem, and I don't know how they're going to deal with it. But a lot of them, I think, you know, jail is made for two people, two kinds of people. One is violent people, and the other one is judges. And the reason why I add judges there is because they have no problem sending people to jail. They have destroyed so many lives. I've seen judges, not that I personally seen them, but read about a story where a judge makes the comment, and he seems to be proud of that, you know, he was retiring, and over his career, he had given out 1 million years in sentences. Boy, I'd like to see him get 1 million years in sentences, you know? I mean, this is serious problems. And so, you know, it's going to be difficult in the beginning to deal with it. But once one county gets in, that's it. Because, you see, the grand jury, as I think you realize, is one whole throughout the whole state. Even though we're doing 63 locations, and we do that because there's 63 locations of the Supreme Court, one in every county for the convenience of the people and to deal with the population. So we will have 62 locations, but we are one. And therefore, if Dutchess County, let's say, or Orange County or Monroe County, they try to block the grand jury from coming in to take their seat, and you have a seat in Greene County can then, you know, put them straight and threaten them with either you obey the law or we're going to take you before the grand jury for the process of considering an indictment. And it looks like you will be indicted if you try to get in the way of the people, taking on what is rightfully their heritage, which is to control their country and their government through the juries, both the grand and trial. And see, that's kind of how we're looking to leverage it in. And we will get. Pennsylvania is very close. Florida is very close. And I'll tell you what, I think New York's very close, too.
You know, the thing is, I don't know which is going to come first. Either the breakthrough will occur for you that you find one jurisdiction that's going to allow it in, and that one that allows it in is going to be the magic one for a lot of
people. Oh, yeah, and we'll empower each other then, because we can catapult you and you can catapult us.
Absolutely. But short of that, then the other option in order to get them seeded properly is to populate the state with the de jure individuals that reside in the state through the Union of States. And that's what I wanted to tell you is ever closer. Now, you ask what the difference is between what you're doing and what I'm doing. Let me ask you, what was your basis for, by what authority did you look to get the grand jury started? I mean, what was your historical reference point?
Well, yeah, you know, first, you know, we were doing some fighting in courts, and we were fighting in the political ground, and not for the politics, because we separated the politics from the political process, and we were trying to make political ground here in New York. And when we picked up on Bill Thornton kind of gave us a lot of knowledge in the common law and the procedures and the processes and how things really worked, you know, thought-wise and, you know, what the theory sort of is. And he talked about the grand jury, and we always thought that the jury played an important role, but we didn't really realize how important a role it played.
Yeah.
And I had seen... United States versus Williams, but I really didn't read it. And one day recently, someone sent me a copy of it. Well, you know, back almost a year ago now, someone sent me a copy and said, "Look, John, you got to read this." So I sat down and I did read through it, and I was just totally blown away by the conclusions that Scalia had come through. I saw, I don't know how many references he made. He quotes so many different cases. So there's like, what I saw was a man who took his life's research on the grand jury and sunk it in this case, United States versus Williams. And I realized, I think that was like a sort of a last-ditch effort. He was trying to get the message out to the people, and he kind of stuck it. You know, it wasn't on point, the case in itself, but a lot of the cases that he referred to was on point, but he poured his research in there. And so I sprung off of that, and I started to look into things. Thornton had pushed pretty heavily on the Magna Carta, and what took place back in 1215,
right.
And I realized the authority back there. One of the mistakes that was made in 1215, and they corrected that by the 25, was that they were going to take that king's life. Later on, they repented of that, and they said, "Well, okay, if something happens next time, we're not going to take his life, but we're going to take his castles, we're going to take everything,
right.
But we'll save his life and we won't harm his family." And of course, that's the righteous position. So it sort of, you know, it sort of grew from there. But we look to the 25 of the grand jury, you know, of the Magna Carta, the 25 freemen, and we relate that to the grand jury. I see the grand jury as the king's bench. In my studies, I've come led to the idea and understanding that the king's bench, ultimately, those who sit on the king's bench reflect the will of the people. And the will of the people, of course, in the United States is the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and of course, just justice as we can appreciate it. The Magna Carta is part of that because that's where we got a lot of our birthing from as far as the jury was concerned. But one of the interesting things I saw in the Magna Carta was that they would set four people out to try to repair a problem. And if they could repair the problem, then they'd repair it. If they couldn't, then they would bring it to the 25. And that's how we set up the idea with using four people as administrators to go out and repair the problems. And if we can't repair the problems, we'll bring it to the 25. And so the people that we're gathering together, everyone is a potential jurist, but we have to be honest with ourselves and we have to be fair. It has to be a jury chosen from a pool constantly, you know, the grand jury when you need it for this time period or the jury for that. You know, it's got to be the people. You got to really get the people involved, and we got to re-educate the people. We got to educate the children in the schools. We got to get them involved. But in any event, the four are really people who are just going out there trying to solve the problems. And the whole idea behind what my thinking is and what I see in justice, especially when looking to the Bible, is really restoring the individual, not looking to punish people, we're looking to restore. And through that restoration, you could get true repentance from the person who violated the other person. And you could possibly even return a person back into becoming a good person in society again, and who knows, even save a soul. Who knows, if God's merciful. But anyway, our intention is to find restitution. You know, our system in America, as we see it, they've totally destroyed it, and they're just interested in punishing people and putting people in jail.
Yep.
I don't think that that's what should be. I think if someone has done something violent, I'm sure they belong in jail. And again, I stick to my position on judges because they're so evil. And they all know. I know now that they all know. I was always wondering, do they really know? Who knows? No, they know. Every judge knows. They're all guilty. So anyway, that's kind of the thinking, the philosophy, and the strategy. We also recognize the fact, you know, we're four people, and we would be paid a salary. The state would pay that salary, and we'd pay for all the cost of operating for the grand juries. But we also realize that any four people anywhere in the country, you know, in any place, can go in and investigate a situation and then make the phone call and come in and bring their case before the grand jury. Because that's how you really get the people involved. Anybody can do this, you know. But one of the key things is we have an oath that people will take, and basically it's built around three principles. We to operate with a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. And we have to try to find a balance between those three things. And if we all focus in on that and take an oath to try to maintain that kind of a principle as we discover each and every problem we approach, I think we'll be doing good. Once we lose that perspective from those three principles, I think we start to run into trouble.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what we teach, and that's kind of how we'll put it together.
Well, I thought it was curious that you have taken exactly the path that I took, because I, too, used the Article 61 of the Magna Carta as my justification for creating the grand jury. I, too, used the writings of Scalia and the others back in 2009 to do the same thing. So, you know, we traveled a similar road. The only thing different between us is I finally came to the realization that I didn't have what it took in order to get the presentments, and there were, let's see, we had convened, I want to say 15, 16 of them across the country. Couldn't get any enforcement anywhere to recognize them, short of one, and that was Chief Justice Royce Lamberth, and I think I might have sent you that ruling. And if I haven't, you need to see that one.
Yeah, just send it to me, because I don't recall whether you did or not.
Let me get out there and find that one, because yeah, it's telling. It's very telling. Anyway, I had that experience, and then I thought, okay, that isn't going to work. Let me reload. Let me stop and then reload, which I did. And in the process of doing that, I came back and formed something called a Citizens Oversight Committee in the county that I was living. Now, that wound up being very results-oriented. And, you know, it was centered around the public service corruption and holding them accountable for that stuff. And the only weak link I found in there was that we were able to do the research. We were able to do the investigations. Didn't have any problems doing that, and got support in doing that. But when it came time for the DA to actually prosecute their friends, then that's when the prosecutorial discretion kicked in. And that's when, you know, you're kind of like, well, you're screwed, for lack of a better term, because you can't, there's nothing you can do with that. Absolutely nothing. So that's when my last wife kicked me out of the county I was in. So I'm back in an adjoining county now, and I didn't know if I was going to do another oversight or just what, and I was taking my time trying to figure that stuff out. Took a year to get my life back together, and then I ran across this concept of the Board of Review. Now, it all comes from the same place. I mean, we're all looking at trying to come up with something that works. But what this Board of Review does is it incorporates the true nature of those barons created with the 25. The four, the way I look at it, I'm gonna create the 25 for the county. I'll use the four for the individual cities and one group of four for the school board. And they'll have their autonomy. They'll be able to pursue as need be. And when that time comes, when that fateful time comes that the DA decides they're going to exercise their prosecutorial discretion, then of course the Board of Review can do something that the grand jury cannot. It morphs into the enforcement arm, and then you actually go out and effect the arrest, take the person physically out of office, and take them directly to the sheriff for incarceration. So that's the way that works. Because if a DA ever takes the road that they're not going to prosecute a crime that is certifiably, verifiably criminal in nature, well, guess what? It's going to be up to us if anything is going to happen. And that, my friend, is where the rubber hits the road. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to suck it up and actually do the enforcement part and stand tall as men, and that's the only difference between what I did with the original grand jury, what I did with the oversight committee, and what this is all about. And I don't mince words whenever I explain this to people. I let them know this is no light duty endeavor that you get involved in here, because it could come down to the fact that we're going to have to act on our own independently, and we will have to make sure, absolutely 100% certain, that when we do so, we have all of our P's and Q's in a row, all of our T's crossed, I's dotted, to make sure that there is absolutely zero liability for us in doing this.
Well, one of the things we looked at early on, and we realized that we were shortfalling, was with the trial jury. And, you know, so very early on, we realized as we continued and looked into it, you know, did our research and was trying to put things together, but we come to realize that the people have got to take control not only of the grand jury but of the trial jury.
Uh-huh.
Further investigation and studies, you know, which led us into the King's Bench. You know, I wrote a paper called "Extraordinary Writs," and really, it's about the King's Bench and how the writs really emanate from the King's Bench. You know, the writ of mandamus comes out from the King's Bench. It can really come out from any court, a higher court to a lower court, but really, this is where it started. And they don't even recognize the mandamus. I know here in New York we've went through the mandamus on a couple occasions, and they don't even recognize it. But we do educate people when the King's Bench puts it out, and we put the mandamus out once, and now we're ready to do, we've already decided to do another indictment. But a couple of things, you see, we kind of took a few strategies. We decided no indictments, not chasing anything until we get a seat in the courthouse. And if they prevented us from getting a seat in the courthouse, that would be the only place we'd start to go in and indict. And if we have to operate out of a tent right outside the courthouse, then that's what we'll do, and that's what we're doing. So we're kind of outside the courthouse. We're sitting in a tent, so to speak, and we are going forward with our indictments. Now, they've called the Treasury Department on us. They've called the FBI came at us four times.
Uh-huh.
And in each case, they all walked away from us, and they walked away from us very quickly. I think the FBI clearly saw and understood what we were doing. I really think they were kind of liking what we were doing, and they realized, they said, look, we're not going to get involved in this. We don't see anyone breaking the law, and we're just not going to deal with this. And they went away, okay? And every time they sent to us out to us in the Bronx, okay, because we got all of the city into the game. We've got all of the counties south of Albany, which is better than, which is about three quarters of the population of the this, of New York. And so we got all of the city in the game. We got Long Island in the game, all the lower counties, all the corrupt places. That's where we went to first, and that's what I knew the best because that's where I come from, and I knew a lot of people down there. But in any event, our thinking and realization is okay, we're going to go after these people, and the only thing we're going to go after these people outside the court for is for not allowing us in. And we come to realize also the big strategy or of this whole thing is really in the filing of the papers. You see, we know we can't force the courts to obey what we're doing, and so we file the papers. And even though the criminals who are in this conspiracy that we have went in and brought a bill against, they are writing letters to these people telling them not to listen to us, not to do anything. So we do the paperwork, we file it, and then we turn to the law, U.S. codes. There's U.S. Code 18, clerk is to file 18-2076. You're probably familiar with these things. Willful and unlawfully concealing and removing or mutilating or obliterating or destroying or attempting to do that to any document that's filed or deposited with the clerk. And the process, there is a process set forth on how paperwork is to flow from a grand jury, and nothing can stop it. Nothing can stop it. And that's one of the key things that was points was made really from the Williams case. You know, once a grand jury indicts, it's got to go through. You can't, the king spoke, that's it. And so we realize that, you know, in the case of a judge, anybody who intimidates another individual or forces them in any way to remove, destroy, or to prevent any document from going forward through the judicial process faces 20 years in jail. And that's U.S. codes. We have New York codes that are similar to that. If a clerk takes the file, they're not permitted to make a tribunal decision. All they ought to do is to file it. They can't do anything else but file it. So, you see, we're taking use of that law. Now, we have filed with a court here in Greene County. We filed with the clerk. We've visited the clerk on a couple occasions. We've sent them some orders. We sent a quo warranto in to the judge, and to which is sort of a, really a notice and demand, but it comes from the court's bench. They didn't obey it, so now we sent in, we went in, we spoke with them, we explained to them that this is their duty, this is their job, they don't have the authority to refuse or deny, and that there is prison time to pay if you break these laws. And if the grand jury decides to indict for you not obeying these laws, you can end up in jail. You're going to go to trial, nothing's going to stop that. And so we went through the paperwork, and we then sent the final word, which was the mandamus, the command from the king's bench, and they disobeyed that. And so the next step is we're going to do another indictment. We're doing there's a group of us that have witnessed the breaking of the law, which was the refusal to file or preventing the file from moving forward. You know, it's been pulled out of the file. It's not in the process on the conveyor belt working its way to justice. It has been pulled out. They haven't notified the newspaper or anybody.
By the way, those files are waiting for you to download.
Okay. So anyway, let me click on them first, and I'll finish up. Okay, save.
Yeah.
Save. Anyway, so the point is that we now are doing, affidavits, witnessing a crime. The crime is removing, mutilating, or destroying, or preventing the flow of paper. And we're then going to take that with the law down to the sheriff, and then we're going to serve it to the sheriff, and he has a duty to obey the law. He knows statutes, okay, and he knows what an affidavit of a witness of a crime means. So it becomes almost a, you know, like a, what do they call it, a civilian's arrest or something like that, when people arrest. What do they call that?
Citizen's arrest.
Citizen's arrest, okay. It's sort of like a citizen's arrest, but you go into the sheriff, you file in the complaint, he's got to do something with it. And when we put witness to the fact that the crime was created, he's got to make an arrest. So that's where we're going to next. Now, we've been working on this sheriff. This sheriff, he is scared to death because he doesn't know what to do. And you see, we've been here let me tell you how bad it's gotten for these people in Greene County. We've done a lot of cases in Greene County. We did a case in Rem for a woman that they threw out of her house, and the whole thing was illegal. They never filed the appropriate papers in the federal court district, which is required. And before you go out after them in Rem, and what they're saying in Rem, that they're going under the Piracy Act and they're just removing people's things and they don't have to do them due process. Well, of course, that doesn't really work here anyway. That's a fraud. But they do use a process that if they say you file it in the federal courts, you have to file a paper for a proof of claim, and they got to file also another paper for fiduciary control over that person's items. And once they do that, then they can go through the file. They can take the property away. That all can be beaten anyway. But nevertheless, that's the process that their own laws tells them to do, the statutes, and they've disobeyed that. And we really beat these people up pretty bad with this case. We had this one guy with the guns, okay, and he lost his permit and to carry a gun. He carried them anyway. And then when he was arrested for them, we were able to beat that in the courts. They got it to the point he had so many people being lawsued because they were violating his unalienable rights that when they see this guy coming down the street, they actually make turns and go different ways. They don't even want to come near him. Mm. So these are the kind of cases we've got going on out here. We had this same guy who went out to Ulster County, another county over. He was picked up for having a gun. You know, he had his weapon in his vehicle. Mm-hmm. His vehicle was he didn't have his license or something, and then they ended up taking him down and they searched his vehicle and they found his gun and they started hitting him with gun charges. And they hook them up, you know, they hook you up to the wall with the handcuffs and all that stuff, and they're interrogating him. And then next thing you know, they come into the office, and they untake his handcuffs off. They take him, put him in the car. He wants to know where he's going. They're not telling him. They drove him back to where his car was. They let him out of the car. They gave him his gun back and said, get out of here. Don't come back no more. And what happened was that they called the sheriff in the other county, which is Greene County.
Uh-huh.
And this is the sheriff we're dealing with. So, you see, we kind of have a little leverage here. This guy knows that there's something wrong with the system. He knows. And we've approached him and told him, look, the Second Amendment is clear, you know. Nothing can violate a person's right to carry a weapon, okay. So he kind of knows it, and he's stuck between having to deal with the reality that he's in and then having to deal with the real reality, which is the Constitution and the law and the right of the people to be able to defend themselves. So now we did these affidavits. I mean, we did this writ of mandamus, and we brought it to the sheriff to have the delivery done, okay? And so we paid him, you know, the $20 or whatever it was, and we had him serve on to the judge and on to the clerk, and we told him, we don't want you to leave it with a secretary. We want you to physically give it to that judge. We want it to physically be given to that clerk. And so it took him 24 hours to do it, but he did do it. And in that process of time, we know they read the papers. And so they're kind of learning. And so we got a lot of pressure going here in New York. And we got a lot of hope. And there's some things going on in other states, too. So that's the key thing, is to get in there into one of these courts, and that's how you're going to get in. You got to keep applying the pressure and putting the pressure on and putting the pressure on. And we really can't, at least we feel, that we can't take on any cases until we're sitting in that courthouse. The only indictments we will pursue is those who are preventing us from taking that seat in that courthouse. But once we get in, we've won the war. Just won.
Yeah, but that is true. We need to get that. We need to get the doggone common law restored because you know, look, we have the highest percentage of esquires here in this nation, and we have by far the highest percentage. Well, not the highest percentage. We have more freaking people in jail here than all combined.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just ludicrous at best. So. You know, we know it's broken, and we know that there's a cottage industry out there with the judicial system. You know, I'm looking at a couple of different things to break through there, and we've got to figure out a way to do just that, to break through. And I don't know if it's going to be the sheriff that's going to exercise his rights or exercise our rights. by keeping the feds out of the sovereign states, which it's his job to do, or if it's going to be this board of review actually taking it the next step further, that the grand jury can't, and be the enforcement arm and force the issue. I mean, literally force the issue. And if it comes to that, have the militia backup ready and in place to be there to make sure that occurs. You know, that's what it's going to take. The appealing to their senses, that shit, I think the time for that's pretty much over, John. You know, I appreciate that you're continuing to pursue that, because we're all pursuing the what we consider to be the last peaceful means of redress that there is.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you know, I think personally, my opinion is that there's so many movements out there, and even though we don't necessarily work together or we have our disagreements and things of that, but I think together, when you compound it and bring it all together, I think we have the perfect storm coming up. Now, they too have the perfect storm coming up with the way the game that they're playing with the economy and playing around with the wars and all the things that they're doing. You know, they're trying to create that environment where they can finally come out after the people. And so we're kind of in a race against this. But you look at the Oath Keepers, you look at the Continental Congress, you look at the work that Schultz done, which brought that Continental Congress up, and all the things that he's doing, what we're doing, what you're doing, and there's some other people doing similar things to what we're doing.
Yeah.
I'm not really too sure where they're at with it, but I know they're doing things. And there's just so many different movements that are moving along, and I think we're all going to meet at some point, and it's going to become the perfect storm. And once one of us gets to that point where we're empowered, it's going to empower all of us, and it's just going to be a thrush, that's it, right through. But, you know, we're in a race against time. Can we do it before they do it? Because they're dead set on enslaving us and destroying this world.
That's the million-dollar question, John. And the only thing that I look at here is that I truly despise those that think that they and they alone hold the key. Everybody else is dumber than 100 chickens for doing what they're doing, and you know that you know the attitude I'm talking about.
I know.
It just drives me out of my ever loving mind.
Well, I support a lot of people and a lot of movements, and you know, I know I'm doing what I'm doing because it's what I believe, and I have a vision, and I know you do too.
Yep.
And I may not jump into your game, and you may not jump into my game, but I do know we're both fighting for the same ends, you know?
I can tell you that I've been where you are, and the only difference is I'm gonna maintain that. I'm going to keep that, and I'm going to incorporate that into a well-rounded movement that, you know, if I am successful, if I'm the one that gets that thing started, then that's going to open up the door, because part of my success is going to be in the charter that we're going to write first, and I'm going to take that charter to the sheriff, and I'm going to take it to the commissioners, and we're going to make our presence known right away. So you know, that's a thought. But the breaking in to the judicial. Breaking that veil, I've got so many different ideas on how to do that. None of them are perfect in their structure, but what I want to do is start at the city level. Go for the city magistrate. First, work the city council. And I started this before I got kicked out by my wife over in Clayton County. And what I did is I went to the commissioners. And I went to their commission meeting room. I don't know what you call that, you know, where commissioners get together. And I worked with the commission chairman, and we had a little ceremony and removed those gold-fringed flags and replaced them with constitutional flags. May not seem like much, but...
And they understood what that all meant, and they appreciated it?
Yes.
That's good. That's a big move.
Yes, and, you know, I thought that was rather important, too.
I have found it very difficult to speak to these people. These people are dead set on believing that common law is gone, and they're under an illusion. They're in a fiction. And we know that they're in a fiction, but they really are under an illusion, because even here in New York, the New York back in 2001 has already reinstated the fact that they want the grand jury to continue in full force, and that it could never be removed or destroyed, and the rights of the grand jury to investigate, you know, either in the political or even the judicial realms, you know, to investigate all government offices. And but they talk as if it's been totally done away with, but of course that's their little fiction, and the whole thing is a fraud. It's all irrelevant. It doesn't mean anything, and it won't stand up in honesty, you know. But the people have to realize, you know, Jefferson said, if people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. You know, on our website, I've got about four quotes, and Jefferson talks about the enlightened citizenry. You know, he talks about that we have to educate and inform the whole masses of people. And so, you know, when you look at what Jefferson had to say, that's kind of my vision, is to really educate the people. And that's why we built the site that we have. It's an educational site. I mean, we teach people how to, you know, the real American history. We teach them. We have a couple of constitutional courses. We have a common law lectures. We wrote a book on how to access the court and what the processes and the procedures of the courts are. We've got a lot of court examples, memorandums we wrote, and different court cases we wrote, which really are a great framework for almost, you know, for many, many different kinds of court cases. And we figure we have to educate the people. And you know, because really they dumbed us down. I mean, the most important things in life they've driven us away from, and they've instilled a psychological fear, and that is a relationship with God, a relationship with your government, and a relationship with justice. You know, they teach us to get either a priest, or join a party, or get a lawyer, and people are unable to stand up on their own. And then, of course, these lawyers, they take you right into the game, right into the bar, and it's in the fiction.
I'm looking for, and I will continue to look for that chink in that particular armor. Okay, I haven't been able to determine conclusively, verifiably, that the Esquire term is a title of nobility. When I can find that link conclusively, then I'm going to use that. I'm going to use the gold fringe flag. I'm going to start at the city council level first. The very next meeting, hopefully that'll happen within the next couple of weeks, and I will videotape it. I will introduce the new board members for the city, okay, not the entire board, but the board for the city, and we will get up in turn, and we will speak to the issue of them taking an oath to the Constitution and sitting underneath a flag of admiralty. And we will demand, not ask, we will demand that those flags come down and the flags of the people go up, and then, you know, kind of admonish the newspapers a little bit, or chide them into carrying this and making a big point of it. It'll come from left field, it always does, but it has been impactful, and it will continue to be impactful. And it will bring many more people to grow the movement, and it'll also set the precedent that's going to allow me to then work on the courtroom, because there's no reason whatsoever that those courts need those gold fringe flags flying in them.
That's right. You know, I looked up into the Esquire, and it identifies with the Armiger, if I'm pronouncing that right, and which is an Esquire.
Yeah.
And that's a title of dignity, and you can look that up in Black's Law Dictionary, and you do a study in that, you can find that it is a title of a dignity. Nevertheless, is or isn't, the Bar Association is a communist movement. It's been around really for a long time, you know, the English Bar. In America, it really has been around in a long time in America, but they really started to really push it in the early 1900s. But nevertheless, and they incorporated the American Bar Association, I think, in 1920-something, you know, very early in the 1900s.
That bar was avowedly communist.
Oh, absolutely. And the bottom line is they have their allegiance to the bar first, the court second, and the people last. And they take everything they do is by fraud, because statutes are not law, as you know.
Yep.
And, you know, statutes is just something that they use to try to control our behavior. You can't control, servants cannot control the behavior of the kings. That's our job. And if we don't do a good job out of that, that's our business. If we harm someone in not doing a good job, then we're going to have to pay the price in common law.
Right.
But nevertheless, you know, these statutes are control behavior, and they're repugnant to our heritage, to our liberty. It's just totally repugnant. And nevertheless, this is what they do. The moment you get into a court, you know, I realized something, and I just realized that recently. I come to a conclusion that. We know that we have problems in the courts, but really what it is every court system we have throughout the United States, and there may be a few places this may not be true, but I'm not aware of it, they're all what's called nisi prius courts. They're statutory courts.
Yep.
Now, you take the court in New York, which is a Supreme Court. We call the trial court a Supreme Court here in New York. And those courts, if you go into the New York Constitution, the Constitution says that all courts, all Supreme Courts are courts of record. And we know that courts of record means that it's a common law proceeds according to the common law. And so by Constitution, they're a court of record. By the United States Constitution, they're a court of record. By even New York Code, I think it's 756, it's a court of record, which is common law to proceed according to the common law. And so when you walk into a courtroom, you immediately are hijacked into a statutory system. And I realized this when I was fighting these cases. I didn't realize it actually when I was fighting them. Later on, now I realize it. You know, this one case where the judge said that he couldn't do something because he couldn't find a statute that would allow him. Okay? And I kind of knew that was a problem, but it really didn't click on how big a problem that is. So I wrote a memorandum, which I engage in every court case I get involved with right now. I attach a memorandum, which is a memorandum on law and jurisdiction. And the first order of business when I go before a judge is to put him in line what his job is. He is the magistrate of the court. I give him the law of the case, which is about 26 pages. That's another memorandum. And the first order of business is this court can't go forward one step, can't do anything till we establish what the jurisdiction is. And I can tell you what the jurisdiction is because I'm the plaintiff, the sovereign of the court, and I wrote down exactly what the jurisdiction is. And I've explained it. It's proceed according to common law. And this is my court. So is this court in line with that thinking, or does it think it's going to move another direction to go towards statutory? You see, I've come to realize every court case, that's the first order of business.
Absolutely.
Nothing else is to be talked about. We're not going anywhere until we get from the lips of that guy in that black robe up there to recognize the fact that he's only a magistrate of the court. He doesn't get a chance to decide anything. He's just a traffic cop, and he's to reflect my will as long as it stands within justice and righteousness. And that's the end of the game. And eventually, at some point, unless the other side's brain dead, okay, I get to decide at the end. And, of course, if a jury comes in, because that is the true tribunal, okay, then they actually made the final decision, and they're going to reflect the will of the sovereign as long as the sovereign is righteous. But, you see, when that judge up there refuses to answer, okay, when he has a duty to answer, or he does answer and say, we're going to proceed the way we always proceed, we're under statutes. Either way, at that point, I object to the whole process. And I'm going to go home after that. I'm going to write a writ of error. And I'm going to also add that judge to the court case. And then we're going to go for the next magistrate. And that's the process that you got to proceed on, in my opinion.
John, before you go any further, I want you to read that first page of the Lambert decision. Not even the first page, the first paragraph.
Okay, Lambert?
Lambert, the first...
Yeah, the one you sent me.
One of one.
Okay, hang on a minute. Okay, you send me two pages. Okay, there's two pages.
Yeah, read the first paragraph of the first page.
Okay, Fifth Amendment provides no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury. And U.S. Constitution Amendment 5. And through presentments, and although presentments are constitutionally permitted, there is no authority under the rules of criminal procedure or in the statutes of the United States for this court to accept one.
There you go.
Knight stays versus Briggs. Yeah, very good. Yeah, I've used that one, too.
Yeah, and that's...
In fact, I think I did use that one in this memorandum.
Okay. Yeah, that's... Even though he didn't accept the presentment in there, the wording that he used is a further justification for what we're trying to accomplish, because he did acknowledge, A, that the presentments are constitutional. And if they are constitutional, and they come, because the presentments only come from a common law grand jury. They do not come from a sitting grand jury. Those are indictments. Okay? So we've got something to work with there. I don't know if anybody's been able to figure out how to take advantage of that or not, but we know that it was the rules of criminal procedure that that did this to the common law, and we also know that in the process of writing that legislation, they did not outlaw common law. What they did was to call it antiquated.
And look, yes, I heard that recently, yeah.
Yeah. So, antiquated or not, it's still valid and always has been. And it's up to us to bring it to the fore. And the way we're going to bring it to the fore is by, unfortunately, nipping at the heels of these courts. And they're all about show. Everything is done for a reason. And if you disrupt the flow, if you disrupt the show, then you have a really good chance of forcing them into compliance. Because as long as they're sitting there under the auspices of a maritime admiralty or military court of attainder, you know, as long as they're sitting under that jurisdiction, then we're going to have a hell of a time trying to drag them out from under it.
Well, absolutely. You know, only I've come to a realization a little while back, and only the people can save America. No one person could do it, no small group can do it, no small movement can do it. The people have got to get out, they got to participate. That's why we work so hard to get a few people in every county also, so our plan kind of works very well, and then with those few people, we'll get a lot more people anyway. But really, to get it into the hands of the people, to get the realization and the knowledge. You see, they fear the people when you come out in the numbers. And if we come out from all around, every county, we rise up and they see us. They have no clue on how big or how small or anything we are. But if they see us coming out of every county within this United States,
yep.
Then they're going to fear, and they're not going to be able to say very much. They're going to have to back off and allow us in. And that's kind of, I think, part of the strategy that's going to work. You know, ultimately, it is my firm opinion and belief that God is in control of this, and if we're going to succeed, it's only because he's going to bless us. And he's only going to bless us if we're within his will. And so we need to bend our knee to justice, what justice really is. And come into this thing as righteous as possible, and then I think it's really in his hands whether it's going to be his will to return this earth back to the earth has never been in justice, you know, it's always been evil controlling it, the prince and the power of the air.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I find it very interesting that America's courts of justice, and they call it courts of justice, what they were supposed to be is justice, and the interpretation of the word justice, even according to Black's Law Dictionary, even in the fifth, it says that it's synonymous with virtue. Okay, and that's huge when you realize that. This is the place, and God speaks about not going into their courts of justice because they're courts of injustice. And yet we go into the courts to take these courts back, and if we're successful, to turn the courts of injustice back to courts of justice, and that is to really to bring virtue, truth, honor, and truth back into those courts. Okay, that can only be by the will of God, in my opinion. And I'm praying and hoping that that's what it is, and I'm pushing towards that that goal.
And that's what we're both doing, John. So again, I just want to make sure that you understand that. Me, coming from my direction, appreciate what you're doing. I'm working two fronts at the same time now in order to complement everything that we're doing, okay? And the
same is in return to you. I appreciate everything that anyone's doing to get to these goals that we're both seeking. And even though we may disagree in a way, we appreciate the fact, and nevertheless, the goal is the same, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got some principles and some ideas, and some people agree and some people don't. And it's okay either way, because maybe they'll agree with you or with someone else. We can still go forward because one of us hopefully will be successful in this.
And I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think we would. I really firmly believe in my heart of hearts, and I'm going to approach it in the way that I'm telling you, and I'm going to ask for God's guidance and hope and pray that He just puts His hand on my shoulder and guides me to the right people, the right situation, so that this can happen. And I think He's prepared me for the battles that I've yet to fight. And I'm really looking forward to him. I always look forward to him. And I want you to listen to this, because this is something that, you see, we're going to have to crank it up here a little bit, okay? Playing nice guy is going to have to begin to take a second seat while we crank up the heat. And this is something called the Universal Orders of the People. Have you seen that?
No.
Okay. And in the preamble, we start this thing. By authority of the people of the several states of the American Federation of States, known internationally for the past 232 years as the United States of America, doing business as, in all caps, the United States, etc., we the people, in virtual and actual Congress assembled, hereby make and enter these, our presence, upon the record, for all the world to see, and for all our public servants, officers, agents, and employees to heed, honor, and obey. To each of you who have taken an oath to uphold and defend the constitutions of the states you inhabit and of the United States, whether you have faithfully done so or not, by assuming the honors and powers of the office you hold, you are bound to honor the oath required, and we intend to hold you accountable to us, as in fact you are. Every legitimate peace officer, sheriff, and all members of the armed forces of these United States, past and present, including the militias, whether organized or unorganized, will be called upon to enforce these lawful orders. First order. Whereas all authority for any form of lawful governance comes from the consent of the people, it is impossible for the government to become superior in authority to the people who created it. And whereas every state constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and the Constitution for the United States of America all contain clear language declaring the foregoing to be true, we submit the following excerpts as evidence of this unrebuttable fact. And it goes on to cite the famous words of the Declaration of Independence, all these truths. And then it goes on to cite Article 2 of the Articles of Confederation, and then goes on to cite Article 10 of the Constitution of the United States, of the Bill of Rights. Therefore, it is hereby ordered, sentenced, and decreed that everyone holding any public office anywhere in these several states or in the United States repent of your arrogance and haughty attitudes, to cease all actions whereby you presume to hold a superior role to that of the people to whom you owe allegiance, and exhibit a submissive servant's heart. Your job is to protect our rights, not to become a bully and a tyrant. The second order. Whereas the foregoing first order is merely the foundation upon which a lawful government is built, restoring humility and an attitude of service in the minds of those holding public offices, especially the ones who come into daily contact with the people, is essential to restoring a constitutional republic. And whereas no government office or officer can manufacture powers for themselves that are not directly bestowed upon them by the Constitution and the laws made in pursuance thereof, and whereas all powers granted to the United States Congress are defined in Article 1, Section 8, the first 16 clauses are commonly known as the enumerated powers because they are specifically identified. The last two clauses of the Section 8 identify powers that are exclusive to the United States Congress and cannot be encroached upon by the states because they pertain only to the territorial jurisdiction of the United States. That domain is strictly limited to the territorial jurisdictions of the United States. That domain is strictly limited to the area commonly known as the District of Columbia and small parcels scattered throughout the states and over the seas. But it is not as extensive as we have been led to believe. And whereas that relatively insignificant area is called the Federal Zone, and it comprises several small islands in the Caribbean Sea and the Pacific Ocean, besides a few plots of land within the boundaries of the several states, it is a mockery and a sham for United States officers of any description from any branch of the government to impose a haughty attitude towards any of the people. We, the people, are your superiors. Furthermore, for any office or agency of the federal government to insinuate itself outside of the federal zone, beyond its lawful jurisdiction, inside the external boundaries of any of the free and independent states that created the United States, constitutes criminal behavior. Therefore, it is hereby ordered, sentenced, and decreed that all federal agents operating within the external boundaries of any of the several states of the Union immediately cease and desist all official activities until such time as it may be determined whether it is lawful for you to continue to function on our soil. Any federal agent whose duties do not conform to the enumerated powers described in Article 1, Section 8, Clauses 1 through 16, found to be presuming to carry out official duties within any of the several states from this date forward, will be subject to immediate arrest for criminal trespass onto the sovereign territory of a state, and may be subject to articles of treason for attempting to impose a foreign jurisdiction on our land by attempting a forced overthrow of our lawful government. Anyone lawfully inhabiting a state where such an agent is found is hereby authorized to issue a complaint for a warrant of the law to arrest such an individual and place him or her into the custody of the nearest local sheriff. Any such sheriff is hereby ordered and is hereby ordered to incarcerate such an individual under force of arms if need be, and bind such individual over for a trial by jury according to the rules of the common law. Ordered by the people this 22nd day of October 2013. I like this. I like it a lot.
Very well written. Who wrote that?
Stephen Hans.
It's a very well written thing. You know, I'd like to propose at some point, what are you proposing to do with that? And are you looking to deliver it at some point in time?
I am going to deliver it. I recorded it at the meeting we had today. And I may do it again because I don't know if I'm going to be satisfied with how that recording came out. But, I want to do that. And then once I do that, it's not that it's not available. It is.
Send me a copy of that. I'd like to have a copy of that. You know what I'd like to do with that at some point in time? And again, you know, I don't want to do anything premature, and I don't want to wait too long either. You know, so there's kind of a balance there. We're pursuing, you know, all 3,143 counties, and we are in every state at this point, and we're really starting to develop in some states very strong. And now it's becoming a competition of movement to get our constituted grand juries going. But what would really be great is if every grand jury, if we can come to an agreement with that kind of a paper like that, and every grand jury was to take that, and at some point, all together, at one accord, we within our own jurisdiction, for instance, us here in New York, someone else in Pennsylvania, and so on. But from every county, you know, we got 62 counties, eventually we'll have 62 seals. And if you put papers with 62 seals in New York from 62 county common law grand juries, sending to every single, elected official in New York and every sheriff, and every state was to do that at the same time, and then collectively we did it at the same time to Washington, I mean, that would be huge. You know, they know then that they haven't got a chance. It's done.
That's exactly.
That'd be beautiful to send that thing out like that.
And that's why I'm talking to you about it. Also, before I leave, there's a guy out in Texas does a radio show. His name is Clayton Douglas, and I'm going to be on his show next Thursday. He does it at 10 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. He's got Wednesday and Friday at 10 o'clock open, And I suggested to him that you would be a good one to interview.
Appreciate that.
And if you'd like to, I'll hook you two up.
Yeah, pass the word. Give him my number, and I'm willing to go on any radio station anytime. We do TV, too. Gerard does most of the TV. You know Gerard?
Yeah, sure.
He's the guy that works with me. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, he does most of the TV stuff. I do the radio stuff.
Well, let's see now. Right, pen, right. Okay, just go ahead and type in your email into Skype, and I'll copy and paste that over to his site. But yeah, this is just such a beautiful piece, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, absolutely.
And when you read it, it just flows so nice. So, there we go. Okay. And John, we're all plugging together. Don't ever let the bastards get you down for lack.
Oh no, not at all. And I'm very careful not to put other people down that I disagree with. I always try to lift them up. But sometimes people come out with some crazy things that are very frightening and dangerous. And I have to warn the people. I may not mention the names of who's bringing it up, but there's a lot of poison out there.
Oh yeah.
And we do the best we can to try to neutralize that poison.
And that's why people bring me into their groups, because I'm kind of like a moderator and try and bring reason and
right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're all working in the same arena. We're working for the same thing, and I appreciate what you're doing. I know you can say the same thing. We will be meeting at some point in a similar venue. Even if it's in different states, this thing is coming to a head, and we are going to make it happen. One of us is going to break through, and
I agree. Lord willing, but I agree. You know.
Yeah.
I think it's in His will. I'll tell you why, because I look at my own life, and I'm sure you look at your life, and I see the things, the marvelous works that He's done in my life, and He's kind of led me. I did not plan to be where I'm at. Mm-hmm. I was literally drug here, and not my plan. I have other things in life. My focus was on. I thought I was going to be in a different place, and I end up here. So I really think that I'm here for a reason. And it could be just because I do bring the gospel into things that I talk about. And it could be just to get the word to other people also. So I don't know what His will is. But I have a lot of hope that it's going to be to save this nation.
Well, we just have to keep the faith. That's all. And God bless. And we'll be talking at you soon, John.
All right. Godspeed. Appreciate talking to you.
All right.
And there's my phone number also you can give to anybody that wants to call.
I'll give them both.
All right. Godspeed. Bye-bye.
Take care now.